This is WBCR LP Great Barrington, Berkshire Community Radio, broadcasting at 97.7 FM or streaming at berkshireradio.org. Stay tuned for a Farm and Garden show with Jalison Moscariello and Bill Taylor. Today we talk with musicians, artists, and gardeners Ben Luxon and Susie Crowfoot about their extensive flower and food gardens. In place of our regular theme, Nature's Dream, we hear a bit of Ben playing the accompaniment to the Puccini aria, O Mio Bambino Caro, which his granddaughter will be performing in the future. Copaic Hillsdale Farmers Market runs now through November 23rd at 9140 Route 22, Saturdays 9 to 1. Great Barrington Farmers Market, 18 Church Street through November 9th, Saturdays 9 to 1. Lee Farmers Market runs now through October 12th, 25 Park Place in front of the First Congregational Church. Lenox Farmers Market is at 134 Main Street, Lenox, till September 13th, Fridays 11 to 3. Millerton Farmers Market is at the Millerton Methodist Church, 6 Dutchess Avenue, through October 23rd. New Marlborough Farmers Market is at 134 Hartsville, New Marlborough Road, Sundays 10 to 1. Through September 1st. Otis Farmers Market is at 2000 East Otis Road through October 12th, Saturdays 9 to 1. Pittsfield Farmers Market is on the Common 100 First Street through October 12th. Sheffield Farmers Market is at First Congregational Church, 125 Main Street, Fridays 3 to 6 through October 11th. Stockbridge Farmers Market is Wednesdays 3 to 6 p.m. through August 28th. West Stockbridge Farmers Market is at the Foundry Green on Harris Street through October 3rd, Thursdays 3 to 6. Markets in North County and information on all markets can be found at berkshiregrown.org. Ben Luxon and Susie Crowfoot live across the street from us. Now in their 80s, they have had full lives as artists, musicians, and co-creators of beautiful gardens, blending the formal and the wild in their Sandusfield Center property overlooking a beaver pond and forests. Ben's singing career of opera oratorios and songs from various genres and Susie's art and design sensibilities have lent richness to the Sandusfield Arts Center, where they are key creators of this community gem. We spoke with them in late June 2024 on their back deck overlooking the flower gardens, and then had a walk and talk around the vegetable, flower, and fruit beds and trees.
It's the daughter pleading with Gianni Schicchi. It's Gianni Schicchi, Puccini.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, it's that one act opera and comic opera, and daughter's pleading with him to take her to Porta Rossa to buy a ring because she's so in love with her very handsome boyfriend. And she said, if you don't take me, then I'll throw myself off the Ponte Vecchio, the old bridge into the Arno.
Yeah.
And I'll drown because this should be so full of sorrow and torment. Oh, Dio, vorrei morir. I want to die.
Yeah.
And then back to pleading, Babbo, pietà, pietà. Babbo, pietà, please pity on me. Yeah.
Good afternoon. I am here with Ben Luxon and Susie Crowfoot in their beautiful garden and home, and I have some questions. We're delighted to have you today. Let me start with Susie. Susie, where did you grow up?
Well, in fact, not that far from here. In Litchfield, Connecticut, Northwest Connecticut, was where I was born and had my entire childhood.
Beautiful.
And although I lived in many places along my way, I came back to the area just over the border here in Sandusfield.
It's a beautiful place. I can see why you chose it. And how about you, Benjamin?
Well, I'm British, or I'm Cornish.
I was
really
going to say, I mean, didn't know that you were British.
No, as long as I'm not English, I'm not English. But certainly I'm British and Cornish. And so I was born in Cornwall, which is the very southwesterly most tip of England or Britain, going down into the Atlantic, actually. Wonderful, very narrow peninsula, about 75 miles long, never getting more wider than about 30 miles or something like that in the north of Cornwall. Where I come from, it's almost like living on an island.
Oh.
And so you have the sea on either coast, you know, with 5 or 6 miles, that's all. So I grew up, was born in 1937, before the war. So my childhood and everything was growing up during the war, with, of course, severe rationing and everything like that. Most people had gardens in Britain. And we rented a house and we had a long garden in the back where we grew all the vegetables and things, very, very important, and had chickens, right? And the front garden was very much the flower garden, quite big. But and everyone had their garden, and that seemed to be very important for the British.
Sounds wonderful. How about you, Susie? What about your exposure to farming and gardening?
Well, I mean, even though I was in Litchfield, we lived on one of the streets in a big old house, but behind was all open country. And so we had many vegetable gardens and fields and horses, and definitely the country was right there. And I grew up in a household where my mother was very passionate about gardening, but she had a gardener. I loved our gardener, John. I spent lots of time with him. I learned that the best thing about a garden is to have your own, and also maybe not your mother's garden. So John was just perfect because he would have me out there helping him, and I loved it from the beginning.
Sounds like he taught you quite a lot, if I'm looking at your garden.
And what kind of things did you do in life? Before we get into the gardening, what things were you doing in life? I know you have an illustrious past. For our listeners who may not know.
Well, Cornwall was very backward. It was a long ways away from anywhere, particularly, say, from 350 miles from London, approximately, something like that. It was not very accessible. So it was very backward at this time and full of Cornish. Right. It certainly is not now. It's become a real destination. But the background was the Cornish were Methodists. John Wesley had a field day in Cornwall. In his brand of religion, just gave them what they needed. You know, it is a message that you don't need to go to church to go to God. You can have God. God is with you. You know, you can talk to God. You can.
Good
you,
message.
He's there. And so that was very important for these poor people. And so the Methodist religion spread through Cornwall, and with it, singing and the Methodist hymns. And the Cornish, like the Welsh, I think their main means of expression was in music and in singing. They were singers. So I grew up singing. I had an exceptionally good boy's voice. I was known as Benny Luxon, the boy soprano, when I, you know, when I was 9, 10, 11, that kind of thing, doing endless concerts, which there were. There was no television. They had radio and that kind of thing, but there wasn't. So people made their own entertainment. And so it was music. Music. And the school I went to had a very good, excellent music teacher and a boys' choir. We were in great demand. We were doing concerts weekends all the time.
So you couldn't help it. You've been on stage for a long time.
That's right. That's right. And I just loved it. I was never nervous or scared or anything like that. It was like second nature to me.
Duck to water.
So you made a life out of that.
Eventually, yes.
Yeah.
I was actually the first one to come out of Cornwall to make the big international career. They didn't have a chance. My father had a wonderful voice, but they didn't have the education. They didn't move at that time. My ancestors never had the chance to do that. And so my generation, when I moved away and went to college, I was going to be a teacher. And that disintegrated when, I, quite by chance, I stumbled into singing. And that was it. Gone.
No teaching career out the window.
Yeah. I was so scared that I wouldn't be able to do it. I've worked like crazy. Apart from the talent and the gift or whatever it was, I work, and I loved it. Because I didn't, it was all new to me. I had no knowledge of all this music. Methodist hymns are great. They go good ways, but then moving into oratorios and opera, leader, all that, it was like opening up picture books. It was wonderful.
It had to be magic.
Yeah.
Susie,
and Susie,
you
had music in your life through Bill and through your own, too.
But she had it on her own.
Well, I did. My family was very musical. My father played the cello. My grandmother had been a singer. We sang. My sister and I sang. And I sang right through school in choruses and shows and so forth. And then I went to study in Europe, and I was with the Munich Bach Choir in Munich. singing under a fantastic conductor, Carl Richter. That's where I met Ben, because Bill and I were there together. And, well, that was the second time back to Munich. First time I was a student. In fact, I met Bill there, too. And then someone recently said, where did you meet Ben? And I said, well, in Munich. Actually, it's a good place to get husbands. But that was later. We were doing a performance of Bach's Matthew Passion, and he was a soloist. We heard him speaking English. We got to know him, and that was the beginning of a lifelong friendship.
Oh. Great.
Yeah.
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 That's wonderful.
Paint a picture of the garden we're looking at, and we can talk a little bit more about your lives with music later.
What is this glorious picture that we're looking at?
Well, we moved here, Bill and I, 45 years ago. There was no garden. There was just sort of a field with second growth. You couldn't see down there to the wetland or anything.
Yeah, the woods was right the way up.
And the first garden I designed was straight across, quite close. I built a wall. And it didn't take me long to realize, because I'm interested in design as well as the flowers,
well, you're quite
that it
an
was
artist.
Too... close to this house, that flower garden. It just wasn't the space. So it took a while longer to say, okay, we'll move it, and did, and pushed it out and gave it shape. So it's a perennial garden, all sorts of flowers. We have a beautiful south-facing land and good slope and good drainage, so we're blessed by that environment. And behind is a meadow, and it goes on down to this beautiful wetland beaver pond that you can see. And it's perennials. I actually, right now, among other things, are lots of daisies, and they're field daisies. I let them go until they're over and then pull them out and make space for other things.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's gardening knows it's a day-to-day thing. It's just a pleasure of discovery and whoa and oh no and oh how gorgeous.
Right now I'm seeing some beautiful, many hues of greens. I'm seeing crimsons, I'm seeing yellows, shots of yellows. It really looks like a Monet painting. It's absolutely beautiful.
Color and
Campion?
Texture.
Yes. Is that
yes.
Rose Campion?
I call it lichness.
The thing that's so special for me is I love the organization of the British gardens.
Yes.
Okay. And in fact, there's hardly any land in Britain that is not tended. Only more land and... but it's all manicured, if you want, by either farming or whatever. So here, we don't have in Britain this wildness and space that you have here. And so what is, for me, is the perfect combination is the order of this beautiful big garden that we have. And then there's the post and rail fence, and then wham, just nature.
Yes.
That's it. And it's all wild down there. And so we have all our wildflowers in the fields and everything like that.
And you mow it once a year in the fall?
Yeah, we mow it once a year.
We
yeah, and
late
usually
late
to get the best of all the flowers and for the insects and, you know, and birds and things.
It's a great thing to do, and we found it brought a lot of frogs and toads, and we had less ticks last year.
Yes.
Because we finally let our meadow, really a lot of our area go.
Right.
Just mowed a little area.
Yeah.
So it really worked.
Yeah.
And so this is exciting. It's the order beside the wildness.
Yeah.
And for me, that
is
so exciting because that's pretty difficult to get in Britain.
Oh, yeah.
And then we have a tremendous vegetable garden, which I've always had a vegetable garden, but it's never been like it is now, having married a British gardener, because he is has very, very high standards, and he's a worker, and so it's something we've done with great pleasure together, including having a good root cellar where we put food up that we grow and freeze, and we have a big family, so it's all good.
And it all gets taken. I have to ask, because I know that this particular wall is a beautiful stone wall that I believe Benjamin created.
No, I didn't.
Then
Susie, this is all Susie with her sense of design. When they built the barn over there, it was just kind of like a rubble area around that. And so she turned that. She wanted the vegetable garden. And then she had a big garden and had the walls built at that time, brought in the soil, did her raised beds. She did all of that long before I was here.
Wow.
And the wall is... Well, I have to say, I don't know if this is kosher in this country or not, but you looking at a dry stone wall, which is not a dry stone wall, it's got cement in it.
That one by the vegetable garden.
Heavens!
I shouldn't have said that. But the wonderful thing, the wonderful thing about it is that the walls remain, and because they're retaining walls, and they just look beautiful. You would never know until in time that various things start to work loose and things like that. Then you say, oh my God, oh, there's cement in there. And so it was my COVID job, because we couldn't go anywhere and things like that. And the wall had settled down in the middle. There was big gaps in it and all that kind of thing. So it was a job I took on to resurface the top of the wall. Mm-hmm. God, I loved it.
It's beautiful.
I know. I look at, I go out and look at it, you know, and I think, yeah, and, you know, all those lovely, managed to find enough flat stones. It's a big wall. It's a, I can't remember the circumference of it, but it's a big vegetable garden. We have about 8 raised beds in there, which are 16 feet by 4 feet.
Yeah. They're, and it, they're so beautifully organized. It's just such a beauty. It's so beautiful as an artist to look at that and gaze upon them and know that it's just a productive garden. It's not just beautiful. There's food coming out of it. It's not just visually.
Oh, yeah. And, and then when I first got here, I wanted some fruit. So I went for gooseberries, and currants, red currants and white currants, which as a boy, nearly everyone had in their gardens, okay? And of course, I couldn't buy them here because gooseberries are not allowed, right? But you can buy them. They have a problem with them, which can spread to the white pines.
Right.
Okay.
But they now have them treated, and so I was allowed to bring my gooseberry bushes in from Connecticut.
Oh,
and the currants, that's not a problem. So we have gooseberries, which
and
is very unusual to find in this part of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had
Love
Cape gooseberries in California.
That's a relative of the tomatillo and
yeah,
the tomato.
Yeah, it's not a true gooseberry.
Here.
It's not a true
It's almost a perennial out there. So but it's,
so tell me what perennial flowering and other ornamental plants do best in this upland environment. It seems that you have a handle on it, Susie.
You've got a lot of variety out there.
I have a lot of variety. Inevitably, certain things are just going crazy. And I think as gardeners, this year has been fantastic with the warmth and the wet. The growth is excellent. And certain things, you know, all of a sudden there's, for example, Shasta daisies. Beautiful. Well, there's taking over. So then you have to kind of say, okay, ask your friends and neighbors, would you like some? and then certain things over winter, like I've grown lovely delphinium. This year there weren't, nothing came back. Why? I don't know. So, and I always put some annuals in too, just to keep the color going all summer.
So what are some of the examples of some of your annuals?
The annuals at the moment that you can't see, there's cosmos, there's some zinnias, there's cleome, white flower over there.
Endless varieties of daisies and things
like
that.
Yeah, and then there's these plants that look like they may even be a medicinal plant. They have kind of a soft silvery leaf.
That's lamb's...
Lamb's ear.
Oh,
lamb's
ear. Is that what that is?
I didn't know. Susie told me that was called that, and I thought, oh God, what a wonderful name.
Lamb's ear. It's
beautiful. Yeah. Well, the flower is just going by, so they're turning brown now. They have beautiful purple flower, but they're lovely. And I love
the foliage is nice.
The foliage is gorgeous. I'll cut them down, the flowers down.
Yeah.
In fact, I look at it and think, God, where's my clippers? I want to get out there.
And then you've got some maroon plants that are not flowering at the moment.
Hookera. There's hookera. Mm-hmm. And then there's penstemon, which is beautiful, tall, also with a purple leaf and that pink flower on the top. That also has that coloring.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there are phlox that's coming. There are a lot of things that will be more in the fall, asters and so forth. And the idea is to keep bloom coming. Some things are spring and some things are midsummer and some things come.
That's it's where it goes all the way through the season, the growing season.
There's
always
frost,
something happening.
I love the way it
coming
looks,
on.
Now, and which of these do you need to replant? For example, the rose campion, which you had a different name for, are the lambs here? They're perennials, right?
No, well, the perennial is lichnus, I call it. Just seeds itself.
Oh, seeds itself.
It just seeds itself.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number of things like that just come up because they seed themselves. And then the beautiful yellow yarrow.
That's
I love the yarrow.
That's so beautiful.
That's a perennial, right?
That's perennial,
Come back. That's
and then I've got Russian sage coming in there and various kinds of geraniums, Johnson's glue.
Are those begonias
on the bottom? No, I don't have any begonias at the moment.
purplish maroon leaves that are...
No, that's the heuchera.
Oh, that's the heuchera. Okay.
Right.
And it looks like you have cat mint. There's cat mint and catnip.
Yes, I have it. Nepeta, I call it.
Nepeta,
yes,
yeah. That's
Sort of on the other side of the wall. The level drops down, and so mm-hmm. there's kind of a high wall there. And then I have a beautiful chrysanthemum, a late blooming chrysanthemum, very hardy, beautiful, soft, pale pink flower that is quietly taking over the whole wall. It's gorgeous. If you need any, I'll be happy to give you one some.
No.
But it's
if
beautiful.
If you can't eat it, Bill won't be interested.
No, you can put it in the front.
But I'm getting distracted momentarily by the fact that there are several beautiful bird homes that are feeders, and I'm getting to see the birds, the red-winged blackbirds, and there are several others that I'm not quite sure who's hanging out in this garden. Everybody seems to be very much enjoying this area.
Well, yeah. We feed the birds all year round. We bring the feeders in at night because of bears.
Yes.
My grandson built that beautiful feeder, which we call the mosque, because it's gorgeous. And the blackbirds go in and out, so it's quite wonderful. And
yeah, Susie's grandson.
Right now we're getting all the fledglings.
Yeah.
All these great big overgrown babies come around, and their parents are feeding them.
That's excellent.
I'm looking at an asparagus bed.
Yeah.
Tell us about that and how you take care of asparagus.
Well, that's a good story because early on, when we first moved here, that was going to be my vegetable garden. There were sort of two things. That's what it was going to be. That was the beginning. And then got sort of moved, so I thought, we'll have strawberries. Well, strawberries are a lot of work and so forth. Mm-hmm. And my mother came and she just said, look, I moved after we all went to college. And I thought I was too old to start an asparagus bed. That was my biggest mistake. Do it. So that is 40 years old. Mm-hmm. And every spring we get 6 weeks of delicious asparagus.
Wow.
Just keeps coming up.
It's on a mound, right?
Well, it's gotten mounded because we put leaf mulch on top.
You just keep adding.
And it just gets taller.
Susie's also very careful in that she has a cutoff time and that's it. We don't eat, although it's still coming up, because she knows we need to get the ferns to feed the tubers. There's a cutoff time, so I think that's why a lot of the reason it's so successful, because it's able to feed itself.
It's the first edible thing in the garden, so it's exciting.
Yeah, my dad had two asparagus beds at the two places he lived. He didn't live anywhere for 40 years. He also said 6 weeks, and then you stop cutting
it. That's it, you stop.
Since we're talking about vegetables, and some of us here really love the tuber type of vegetables, what about potatoes, Mr. Luxon? What can you tell us about your potatoes?
Not a great deal, because I think I've probably had to give up now. The potato beds were a lot of work and a lot of digging.
But you had quite a number of varieties.
Tell what kinds you grew.
Yeah, I must have put in 5 or 6 different types of potatoes. But I think my favorite were the...
Fingerlings,
which actually we don't have in Britain. I guess we do have them, but I was never aware of them.
Pintos are fun too.
I love the fingerlings. Pintos, yes, there were pintos.
Now, are they colored inside?
No.
No.
We have had done blue potatoes.
No, we have blue potatoes 1 year, but somehow I couldn't move to that.
We have purple. We have
too
purple
conservative.
Potatoes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a rose-colored one inside.
Yeah. Yes, but one of the things, of course, which I have to grow every year are my runner beans.
Oh.
And the scarlet runners.
Scarlet runners.
Yeah. Oh. Which I don't see very much in America, actually. And it's a very different bean from the normal bush beans and pole beans, which are more round than the scarlet runners. A flatter bean, slightly broader and deep green. Of course, you eat the whole pod.
Green bean, not
special.
A shell bean,
not a cooking
bean.
And you probably don't wait too often to cook it. You probably just eat it right off the...
Yeah, you can do. They're delicious. Anyway, they're rather special. And they have these wonderful scarlet flowers. Mm-hmm. The vines get covered in scarlet flowers. Okay. And, of course, I build my edifice each year. There's a big edifice out there.
You like your
teepee? They all grow up around 7 or 8 feet, something like that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's fun.
We're having a ball with the beans that we have.
Yeah, they're purple. Purple pole beans.
Purple pole beans, yeah. Nice.
So what, you were talking about fruit a little bit while ago. What are the other fruits that you've been growing? I happen to know there's a peach tree over there.
Oh, the peach tree, it brings out my mean nature. Okay, when you're told, you mustn't have those peaches touching, okay? You've got to pull them out if they're touching. So I'm there pulling out these perfectly good peaches and I'm going to just throw them away.
To thin it.
Otherwise, they'll just rot. And so there's almost as many peaches I had to pull out as there are on the tree.
Yeah. I remember a few years back when you two were traveling, I think we were told, if there's a lot of fruit, just pick it. And that was the sweetest peaches I've ever had. Delicious. Oh, my.
Of course, that last year we all didn't have any fruit because of the frost.
It froze in February, stunk. 16 below, and the buds all died.
Actually, my recollection is it was a late frost when they'd all flowered and everything got hit by the
frost. Our peaches never flowered. They didn't. The flower buds never formed.
Poor things never made it.
We face northeast.
Okay.
We face south.
What's the difference, possibly?
Maybe that didn't get as cold here. Maybe you're protected because there were no peach blooms at all.
Our little spot that we have is the Siberia of Sandusfield. We have that cold little spot. So don't ever look like it's a surprise when somebody's getting fruit and we're not.
And so we're also lucky that wild, we have a whole lot of Concord grapes over there that grow up. That grow up the trees.
You might say this year there was something that looked like a bear, but it was wearing clothes.
Right.
Because that's my favorite grape. He just pointed out, I'm not telling anybody that's listening where it is.
And we've got some on the arbor, too.
Oh, good.
We have some cultivated ones as well.
Our neighbor Rick gave us three Concord grapes, so we're going to have them on our fence, I'm hoping.
Good.
Yeah.
So let's talk about cultivation methods that you use. Are you doing a lot of pruning, deadheading, mulching, irrigation? What makes this place look so fabulous?
Everything but irrigation. We really almost never water. Mm-hmm. We almost never water.
Even the vegetables?
No, not unless it gets really dry. We have these huge maple trees all over the house. We mulch that, and we make this leaf mulch. And we always put compost in the soil. So I think that keeps the soil holding the moisture.
And do you make the leaf mulch with a mower, or do you have a shredder?
Well, the
mower and an additional kind of like a box on the back of the mower, which also has a blade in it, which chops it more. So,
it's
just perfect.
It's
actually very fine, and it certainly slows the weeds down. And also, of course, you're feeding the soil. Really, in our partnership here, Susie is the real gardener. But what I love is the preparation. I'm not a very subtle gardener, because it seems to me half the time you put things in the ground and the damn things grow. I mean, it's a miracle, really. So, but as long as you've looked after that. So what I enjoy, I'm honestly one of the few people that enjoy weeding, because my mind stops.
Yeah, there you go.
And there's nothing there. Just your hands in the soil and what you're doing.
And getting what needs to go.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, I love it. And then the preparation, putting in the compost and then the mulching and all of that, I absolutely love. But Susie is the real gardener.
Right. It's all real gardening.
It is all real gardening.
But I just want to say that other thing about the leaves. If you just put these maple leaves on top, they don't break down well enough on
top.
No.
You have to do this chopping them.
And if you don't have the fancy mower you have, I have to run over it, keep dumping the bag out, and running over them three or four times to get them to
that's right.
Point.
Well, somebody suggested this to me years ago. It was the best suggestion ever to get this thing, which just... It's going every fall.
So it's got a shredder in the back?
And shredder in the back.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
And then you produce a huge box.
You'll have to look at it. I can't
tell. It's about almost 6 feet long, about 4 feet high, that kind of thing. And probably about 2'6" wide.
Wow.
And it just fills up with this wonderful mulch.
The mulcher Ben is talking about is a TracVac, TRAC-VAC.com is their website, TRAC-VAC.com.
That's so wonderful. Yeah, it's a lot. You're getting all kinds of good things like mycorrhizal fungi. You're probably getting all kinds of good colonies feeding everything, because everything looks so well fed. There's nothing here that looks scrawny. No, feed me, take care of. Yeah, exactly. You look fine. You look wonderful, by the way. Just in case. So let me ask you this. I know that the two of you are the team out here. Is there anybody else in the family that pitches in and does some help in the garden?
Oh, my God. I mean, this year, because of my illness, I have terminal cancer. Okay, right. Now, and so I don't know how much time I have left. I'm out in the garden all the time.
Yes.
But I puff and I, you know, I have to sit down a lot, but I can still do all kinds of bits and pieces. But my children have been coming over, and boy, and are they workers. Yeah. They're incredible workers. So the garden, I was scared, you know, that because I can't cope with it now.
Right.
And I'm still there.
You're directing, aren't you?
But they've done so much work, goodness. So the garden is looking almost better than it's ever looked, with the tremendous work input from children and grandchildren.
Well, Ben, you better not go anywhere, then.
No.
I think you've got a different role now.
Yeah.
I think it's chief engineer. You just tell them what to do.
We saw you and your son wearing a really cool bug baffler thing, and Jay got them for us, and I'll just say this for the listeners out there. There's something called the bug baffler, which makes working with the bugs out there so much more pleasant.
Well, yeah.
Unless it's really, really hot, and then it'll get a little hotter in there, but it's pretty cool.
It's better than being itchy.
Oh, yes.
Much better than
itchy. And really, it's like, you know, it's a little annoying, but when the mayflies are here, and it's horrible, and you could just suit right up and with this, and it's great.
There's mosquitoes, and we're getting into
deer fly.
We've already are in deer fly season.
Yeah, it's a bug land.
Yeah, and it might help with ticks, although I was wearing mine, and then I still got a tick bite.
No, you have to still check for ticks, because they sneak in little places.
Oh, yeah.
They don't necessarily sneak in through the bug baffler, but through your waist.
Probably through my hands, and then in the
wrist
or something.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you still got to be careful.
You do,
you
do.
But it's a wonderful thing. I took it to the... We have a watercress patch, and I took it down there. And usually I get eaten alive down there, and I was
happy,
actually enjoying it.
Yeah, it is.
And so let me ask you, what are your favorite things about the garden? What is the thing that, when you wake up, what is the favorite thing that you like to do with the garden? I mean, what is it that calls to you?
Well, this is a really big garden.
Yes, I know. And
we should try and guesstimate
how big it is.
Down for the years, I've loved it because I can been able to cope with it, with the heavy work and everything, the wall building and everything I've been able to do. And so that's what I've loved, because I'm not doing anything else. And now I'm out there pretty well all day, and I'm quite happy. I have an old plastic chair, which is very light. I take it wherever I'm working, and so I can sit down, because I have to sit down a lot and get my breath back. And I'm quite happy to sit there in the middle of the vegetable garden and just sit there and just look at it.
It's
and
gorgeous.
Just be there. Strangely enough, I'm broadening with this illness. I've always been a person that's always having to do something. And I think, oh my God, I've got to do this. Oh, yes, that needs doing. And that's just going. And it's quieting. And I'm able to sit and observe much more than I have done in my life before.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a whole lot to observe.
There
here.
Is,
and it's kind of wonderful.
Yeah,
it really is.
And sounds liberating.
It's liberating, and I'm just, it's just, I can't explain it.
Well,
it's
we live in a country of so much doing. It's really wonderful.
What
to
about you, Susie? What about you? When you wake up, what are your thoughts?
I love the early mornings. I'm up very early. I fill the bird feeders. I go feed the chickens. I wander through the garden and just take in the sheer beauty of where we live. And it's something I think it's this quality I've always had of being very aware. And to some extent, there'll be times that I'll have to say, stop buzzing your brain. Look around. Just take it in. And it's extremely soothing to me. I absolutely love, and I feel so grateful to be able to live here. I just, the gratitude is huge. And so then I'll start to see little jobs or little this that need to be done, and I'll get at it. And, you know, and of course, now that I'm almost 83, I have to stop and do a little bit less at a time.
So I have to say, if you had to approximate the size of your gardens altogether, and we're talking about 3 acres, 2.5, 3 acres, something like
this cultivated, so to speak.
Yeah.
A couple of acres.
Yeah,
I'm not quite sure.
I don't even know.
It's
because they're pieces and bits, and I have no idea.
I would say, I'm just for the people who are listening, I would say there's a good 2 acres in various shapes and
it's
additions.
It's not in between. It's not like and solid some, beds
no, no,
you
no,
can't
absolutely.
Walk through like mine. But it's
well, what's beautiful about it is that it's laid out with an artist's or two artists' eyes, and you can walk, you can meander, you can be exactly what Susie and Ben are talking about. You can observe it. You can take pleasure in it. It's not crammed. It was designed with that, I think, in mind, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And because the two of you are usually very idle because of the garden, I'm going to say, what other projects are you involved with, such as something down the road?
Sandersfield Art Center, which is brings us all together. Mm-hmm. Yes, we have been involved in it. I have since it absolutely started. And Ben, when we got together, he joined me and began the Sandersfield Players, and we had a 12-year run of putting on plays, he wow. directing, me making sets, and a tremendous group of people.
A lot of fun. We had a lot
and
of fun.
And then I'm an artist, so I paint, and that too.
And you have some lovely work there.
I do yeah. right now.
Yes.
Thank you. So it's very dear to our hearts, the Art Center. It's a lovely community place, and we love the people that we've become friends with and continue to become friends with, because there's always somebody new.
And aren't you having a performance coming up sometime soon?
No, not me. I had to cancel it.
Oh, okay.
It was sad. I just don't have the stamina to sustain. It was going to be a program about James Joyce,
right?
In which I had edited one of the chapters from Ulysses, which was, I had a lot of fun. I did one performance and I loved it. There's some music with it, Irish song.
Ooh.
Which James Joyce was a huge musician, which I had not realized.
No,
he was absolutely
either.
A major pianist and had a very fine Irish tenor voice. And there was a time when he thought maybe he would be going to have a career in music. And he was good enough. So it's studded with references, Ulysses, to various Irish songs. So I went through the whole program and acted it all out. Played about, I don't know, 7 or 8 characters.
Whoa.
It's about the guys that come into the pub, right, for lunch. And they come in to sing.
Oh.
Got me. They don't just sing, you know, any old stuff. They're singing operatic arias and they're singing big ballads and all that kind of thing. They're really serious.
So I wonder if we can
two or three of them played
people.
The piano. But I couldn't. I also did it with an Irish accent, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All these characters, and I can't sustain it.
No, I understand.
I don't have the stamina.
No, it wasn't recorded. Yeah.
So I had to cancel.
His son,
but my grandson is playing a big piano recital.
Yes,
he is.
Later.
In the end of July, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
when is
end
that?
Of July. 27th of July.
Afternoon, Sunday afternoon, I think.
I have a question. Are there any questions that we didn't ask you that you would have liked us to, that you would like to volunteer or is some info? What would you like to say?
No, you've asked us. We've had a wonderful conversation and all very natural. Both Susie and I have been married before, and I think probably Susie got me at the best time. You know, not earlier.
Yeah, you had a little practice.
And so what's interesting that I've not lived with a woman before where I share identical interests, so many identical interests.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of wonderful. That's very special.
It's
but the art, the music, I like visual art as much as I like music, even though I was a musician. And everything in our gardening. We both are actually passionate about gardening in a quiet way.
Well, you can see. Yeah. You can see. We're going to take some shots.
I want to just add that we have been lucky enough to have new neighbors. The two of you come into our lives and learn a lot about different kinds of gardening, and that's been pretty exciting.
Yeah, yours looks so orderly and beautiful, and mine is a mess all the time.
I have to tell a story about the two of you. The first time you came over, and Jay was just looking at how beautiful it is and remarking about it, and Bill was bent over picking things and say, well, this tastes good. No, that's not very good for you. You can eat this. You can't eat that. And hardly noticing the aesthetics. That's maybe unfair.
No, it's completely fair.
That's true.
Bill, when
I go
say,
into details.
That's right.
When you say, Susie, when you offer up a lovely floral bulb or something, Bill's immediate thought is, Well, that's no good. You can't eat it. Why do you want that?
Yeah.
You
know, it's like, well,
it's kind of my last interest.
Yeah,
in
yeah that's his. He doesn't think about it. We had dahlias, though. I was running the farm for 3 weeks.
And the one
someone
who planted
gave us,
them.
Yes, he finally planted them because he saw them sitting in this little pile of mud that they were encased in.
Which had dried out completely.
Dried out completely.
Because there's a little shoot trying to grow out of them. I said, these have to go in the ground.
Good for you.
I know. And yeah. I said, well, I'm all farmed out. I can't think. Where do you think so they'll go? So I may have some dahlias next year.
Excellent. Oh.
Yeah, well, this is gorgeous.
I think maybe,
yeah.
Sure,
you know, I've often thought that maybe if when Susie and I had gotten together, we were younger, we would probably have extended more this place and maybe even gone for some market gardening and growing things.
<I don't, laughs> Susie,
well, because
for those who can't
there's
see,
some room.
See, Susie's giving
we have
a very
the room,
yes,
and you could give it
dubious
away
looks,
or
yes, I'm,
whatever.
I'm,
but
I'm
you know, I think we might have been even
that.
More active. Had we been
you'd
that
have
much
been
younger.
More exhausted than anything. Let me just say that. Yeah. Having a market garden, it's very rewarding and satisfying in many ways. It's also exhausting.
Yes, I can imagine. Yeah, a lot of work.
It is.
Yeah.
We interview a lot of farmers, and many of them say, why do you want to do that? We grow food for our families. That's it.
Right.
Well, I also have to say that with our large families together in this very unsettled world that we're living in,
mm-hmm. yeah.
the conversation does go to the fact that we could support quite a lot of ourselves right here.
That is right.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
yes, you
in
could.
The,
oh, yes,
in the future.
Could.
And that is a fact. And that's
yes.
something that's a comfort.
I was just going to say, it must be very comforting because you have to feel that way. I mean, we felt that way in California.
If I think back, that's the world I grew up in.
Yeah, everybody having a big
people
garden.
People needed their gardens because they really needed to try and feed themselves as much as possible.
Absolutely.
Because it wasn't there. And I remember having my first banana. I must have been 8 or 9. And I was given this fruit because I'd never seen one before.
Right.
Yeah.
Where would you get a banana
yeah,
in the UK?
The banana. And I remember it was just delicious and awesome. And, you know, this peel back these skins. It was something very different. People in general, they gardened and they needed their space to grow as
or
much as they could.
Gardens, these community gardens, were, you know, allotments.
Allotments. Mm-hmm. Oh,
everywhere.
I love allotments.
So
never needed one, never have one, but so many people did, of course.
And they still
again,
do.
Again, because of the war.
Now. My granddaughter yeah. in yeah. Montreal has an allotment.
People lived in apartments or houses
yeah.
without.
It's still, yeah. it's still yeah. going on a lot.
And you love it, home. Spending time on your allotment, little shed there, you know.
Yes.
And, have a rest and
yeah.
Yeah,
garden.
Yeah,
saw there are all these jalkas.
And
at the
lots of other people yeah. meeting up with lots of other friends that have got their little allotments and
it's
things.
It's a wonderful.
Yeah,
and to
it
get
is.
Away from the heat of the city,
yeah.
to go
yeah.
in that little piece of green.
Exactly.
Yep.
Or
it's
in
beautiful.
Cities, they have them
yeah.
too, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Fenway Gardens and
yes.
all the different community gardens in Boston.
Absolutely.
Too.
Yes.
It's great. I think that's
no,
great.
Yeah.
I think that the community gardens are a wonderful idea, but I'm really happy to be in this community and sitting here and enjoying this garden.
Oh, yeah. Space, space,
I don't know
space.
If you want to walk over to the vegetable garden
I would
and ask
love
any other
to.
Questions.
Do, would you be sure. up for having a little walk
sure.
over to the vegetable
yeah.
garden?
Let's do it.
Sure.
Let's see. And I'm
yeah.
looking at a beautiful pottery planter. That's sitting on Susie and Ben's table. It's just gorgeous.
Made by my daughter.
Made by daughter Erica Crowfoot, another artist.
Feverfew.
That just comes in. I love it, you know.
And is that bergamot? Orange bergamot? Or?
You tell me what it is. It's a mint.
Nope.
No, it's not a mint.
Almost tastes like pennyroyal.
Oh, really?
You're not supposed to really eat too much
no,
of that.
No, I won't. I'll just
really
taste
it's,
it.
But it's good,
but
for,
it's good
against
for
bugs.
Bud bites.
All
right.
You've got violets.
Yeah.
We
no,
eat those sometimes.
Like all sorts of things come in on their own. And I,
oh, yeah.
Tastes like pennyroyal. This is a bug bite set.
And these are very oh, sedums. Right. They come in the in the fall. And
which do the?
The sedum.
You don't oh, sedum, yeah.
yeah.
Stonecrop.
Yeah.
Or sedum, yeah.
Yeah.
The sting.
Oh.
I remember we...
What,
we're,
nettles?
You know, lots of, they're yeah. very prolific in
Do you
Britain.
Have them natively
they were
there?
Brought in.
We finally, someone brought some
and,
soil that had nettles
remember,
in it.
I remember
we brought three different kinds from California, and two of them are thriving, and one of them is cricket. Barely hanging in there.
Right.
It looks more like the one here. The one here seems like it gets much bigger.
I don't see, I mean, we haven't seen it on this property.
That's why we brought them in from
yeah.
California. We came here and said, okay, there's no nettles here.
Right.
Who had a relative that was staying with us.
And nettles have a lot of
And the bowl went
property.
In there.
I make smoothies, and we actually sell them at the market. People love them.
Yeah. Ben sings a wonderful song of that was written during a strike, the mining community. It has a verse. I can't sing it, but we lived upon nettles when nettles were good, and Waterloo porridge was the best of our food.
Dahlias?
Those are peonies.
Oh, peonies, I mean. Yeah. Peony.
Dock leaves
for nettle stings.
Sting nettle stings.
Ooh. Yeah, it takes it out very effectively.
That's
you
have, so
you know, you
dock.
Just crush up your big dock leaf and rub it well into the sting.
Okay. My grandson built this gate for us.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Gorgeous. Isn't that gorgeous?
Yes, yes, yes.
Beautiful. I've got wisteria starting up now.
That's Nicholas
Crowfoot Frittingham.
Frittingham. So we're looking at this beautiful wooden gate with a lovely red-breasted robin on it, and there's
Hollyhocks.
The blacks.
Oh,
they're gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Oh, and there's a beautiful painted bird, a large painted bird. I wonder who made that.
That would be me. That was me. And that is a scarecrow, if you will.
Scarecrow,
it's a crow scaring every other crow away.
It looks like a dinosaur.
It's a gigantic, colorful scarecrow.
He's something on one side and he's a woodpecker on the other.
You got big parsley going off to seed.
There's a grape arbor over beyond, and I see shallots to the left.
Do you save a lot of seed from your vegetables? Parsley or anything like that?
Not too good of them. No.
Hello, little monkey.
Garlic, loads of tomatoes.
Wow.
Pole beans, Ben's pole beans. My spinach we're going to eat tonight is
runner beans. Scarlet runner beans.
Beautiful.
And the peas coming now finally, but they got eaten by slugs earlier.
Oh, we had big slug here, yeah.
We had to make this fence here for the rabbits who were coming in.
That's right, you said there were rabbits.
It's beautiful.
And we're doing the cucumbers like this year.
That's, and that's what they want.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Isn't that nice? They hang down then.
There's like a trellis of roughly 4-inch mesh of little 1 by 1/2 pieces of wood on a frame.
Right.
Tilted at an angle.
Yeah.
Just describing this for you on the radio who can't see this.
Broccoli and kale and kohlrabi, I love that down there.
How do you deal with voles? Do you have voles
not
here?
Not too bad.
We
not
don't seem
bad.
To have too much
Do you have screen
trouble.
On the bottom?
No.
But rabbits appeared for the first time.
Yeah.
Was that last year or the year before,
it
Susie?
Good, it?
It smells fantastic.
We've been lucky. So I had to build this fence around. We decided to isolate 6 raised beds.
But I want to make mention of what's down here. Sorry, Ben, I'm interrupting you for a second. Bill asked if they have voles, but what's standing between Benjamin's legs is a little monkey dog that is a
Jack Russell.
He's a Jack Russell.
He's a Jack.
The best dog to have.
And he's Oscar. And
he's very sweet.
And they chase little creatures away. They're known to do that.
Yeah.
You want to go in?
Sure.
Yeah, it's just all very rustic, but it keeps
so
a rabbit.
The
beans have started.
The beans are coming.
They're always later than the normal bean. They won't be really ready until about September.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And do you get one picking, or do they keep going until it freezes?
Yeah. They keep going.
Beautiful lettuces, and you've got marigolds. How do you deal with bugs? You don't see any.
We don't do anything.
No, we
about
don't
them.
Much. We don't get bothered with bugs.
You don't have leaf hoppers that eat the arugula. And you've got the rustica. You don't have you got a little bit of eating on there, but
red
it's not
curly.
Much.
John Kempf talks about the plant health pyramid, how plants get more and more resistant to different kinds of insect pests, the more that minerals and biology are available to help the plants. And it looks to me as if Ben and Susie's many years of gardening, their use of the mulched leaves and other practices they do, make the plants healthy enough to be resistant to most insect pests.
We got a lot of lettuces.
And Asian greens.
Beautiful.
My cucumbers are now going crazy. Yeah.
Oh, they look lovely.
Yeah. Everything's pretty darn happy.
Yeah. It's getting
and the onions are looking very nice.
Now, do you buy starts or sets, or do you start them
just
from
buy
seeds?
Some set, you know, a whole lot of sets, a whole lot of.
The green plants, or are they the little dry sets?
No, dry sets.
And
dry
they do
sets.
Pretty well. Well, I'll have to try that next year because I do it from seed and they never really quite.
That is truly amazing over there.
That's
okay, the chicken pants. And so this is a autumn raspberry there.
Ah.
I throw the weeds over to the chickens.
And they love them.
A lot of. Oh, yeah, absolutely. But that pen has remained for the last 20 years bare.
like they scrabble it up and kill it and it dries up and dies. This year, that is what's happened.
It's amazing. It's so green.
It's grown. Everything has grown. Everything, nearly everything I've thrown. Wow.
It grew too fast for them to eat grown. It to nothing, right?
It's amazing.
Wow.
Don't quite know how to cope with it. Whether chickens like it better or whether they'd rather have it bare.
They look pretty happy.
Well, you can always cut things down.
Oh, they're
I guess.
Very happy.
This is so
sad. They're old girls, too.
So, yeah. These peas.
Oh, yeah.
They're trying now.
Yeah,
but it's
something
getting hot
got,
for them, too.
Something got all our sugar snaps.
I love
everything.
Sugar snaps.
That was a vole or something, I think.
No, it was slugs, I think.
Slugs?
Slugs.
So, right. What kind of chickens? I'm looking at these beautiful champagne colored birds.
Orpington buffs.
Orpington buffs.
And then you've got the speckled ones.
And what about the black
ones.
Speckled, beautiful black speckled ones?
I think we call them just black speckled
hens. Black speckled hens.
We don't really know.
They're gorgeous.
Yeah, they are.
They look extremely well fed.
They're very happy.
And do you raise any? Do you hatch any or do you buy
them?
We have
done years back, but no. I get them from Bridget. I'll get some pullets from her.
Mm-hmm. Bridget has Joshua Farm just up the road.
Yeah. Another new little Concord coming on.
Oh, nice.
They are growing. This is beautiful.
So it's like an arch / arbor that you walk through into the garden. It's really beautiful
the
design.
The edge of their vegetable garden is this whole long patch of raspberries.
It's massive.
And they're gorgeous. This is just beautiful.
And those are the fall raspberries. We they're never bearing. I cut them down to the ground in the fall, and then the growth is the second what produces in the fall.
Oh,
mm-hmm. So they come in September. They're so sweet.
Oh, so you cut those to the ground in the fall. You just get the one crop.
Exactly.
But it's later.
Yeah, because we got plenty of these.
You got plenty of these early
summer
ones.
Summer crop. You can have them come both times, but you don't get as good a crop of peach. This way it puts all the energy
into
the
this
second.
This was my potato patch. I don't know if this is an American thing. I mean, growing these currants. They're delicious.
They're gorgeous.
We grow them. We saw them in Poland, and we...
Right.
Or we just had some. To have some.
My poor little gooseberry bushes, I think they're on their last legs now.
Oh, they're beautiful.
The gooseberry. They're not like the green gooseberry. They're that much sweeter.
I was just going to say, I'm looking at these plump, kind of ruby-colored
but orbs. They get almost black when they're ripe, I think. Don't they?
Yeah, they need to be picked soon, but...
Yeah, see, that one's almost black. That's what you want.
Yeah. They're ready.
Okay, pick it. Oh, they're coming now. We could do a little pick. But there's so few, we get very mean because everyone wants gooseberries. Our friends wanted, can we have some gooseberries? But
they're fantastic. I can see why they want them.
And this year, more blackberries than ever before.
Mm-hmm. Are those thornless?
They're thornless.
Did you plant them this year?
No, last year.
Or those are just volunteers?
Still lying there.
Yeah, once you planted potatoes in a bed, if you don't get every single one out, you have potatoes there forever.
Well, ultimately, this is going to be just mown. But this year, we're going to harvest those potatoes.
Oh, yeah.
So if you have food that for whatever reason doesn't get eaten, and you can't think of what to do with it, you've got chickens to feed it to. It feels so good.
Yeah.
And that's what farm life is all about.
We don't have chickens. But, if you put it in the compost, it's okay.
Right.
If you give it to chickens, it feels wonderful.
It's better. We've got plenty of compost, too.
Yeah.
Do you know what this is, Bill?
That's chickweed.
Oh, they love
it's
it.
It's absolutely doing well this year.
So good.
We put it in
you.
Salad, make a pesto with it.
Yeah.
With all kinds of things to do with chickweed.
Lymph. It's great for everything.
It's got a little white flour.
The chickens just love it.
Oh, they do.
It's delicious.
That may be why it's called chickweed.
I bet you that's why it is.
So when we planted, I didn't want a dwarf tree. I wanted trees that turn into big old-fashioned apple trees.
Yeah.
Right? That's what they're doing.
Look at all the beautiful mulch they're getting.
We just did that from cutting grass.
Grass wonderful.
Cutting. A grapevine that's very rampant. So we're going down to a peach tree. Is that what we're looking at? Oh, wow.
Peaches there.
Had to take them all out.
Broke my heart.
Yeah, well, they say to thin them out like this.
This is my original potato bed.
And now it's got zucchinis and...
Zucchini and squash. Yeah.
Patty pan.
Yeah. Susie just planted a whole lot of sunflower.
Mm-hmm.
We love the Mexican sunflower. And this has never been... This is a kind of soak away from our septic system down here.
It's
never been this high before. We're doing very well for the monarch butterflies. And this is, we have a whole milkweed plantation in here.
Yes, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's gorgeous, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's another reason to not mow everything, is you get the milkweed and different things coming in.
Yeah. And I like the valerian too, but boy, that's everywhere. It grows all the way along the post.
It's got white flowers. It's got very broad leaves. It looks vaguely related to a carrot or a cow parsnip, but it's... got these little tiny white flowers with five petals. Brassica mustard family have four, and this one has five. And what's this tree? Hydrangea.
We have this hydrangea that's growing on the side of the barn. You can see it up there at the top.
Oh, yeah.
Coming around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
It blooms like crazy.
Now, do they have blue ones here?
I don't have any.
I've never seen them out here. They seem to grow like in Connecticut, but maybe it's too cold. I don't really know.
And the other thing, Bill, you can imagine, you think when you see an old maple tree, well, there's a full-grown tree, but of course they keep growing.
Yes.
So these things are reaching for the sun now, and that hydrangea is coming around trying to get to the sun. I mean, these trees just keep getting bigger and bigger.
Wow.
So magnificent.
They're happy.
Yep.
They're getting some goodies.
And always, you know, that's the other thing, this joy of being a long time, because planted these, planted that hawthorn, planted that, can you believe?
That big tree? Yeah, we've got three steps.
There's no monotony going on in this garden.
The alliums are gorgeous, aren't they?
Oh, they're beautiful.
Yes, they're huge. They're like 6 inches in diameter at least.
Oh.
They've changed color. They've got a bit dull now.
I love like this. It's called tansy.
Tansy, yeah.
Oh, the flower isn't exciting, but that's so beautiful, that color, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's a more all yellowish green tansy. Ooh.
These are all the field daisies, but they're fine.
Oh, yeah.
How happy they are.
Oh, they love that.
They're good in salad, those daisies.
Yeah.
They're so pretty, those bees.
This is the same chrysanthemum as my mother.
Wow.
Mm. Just this happy.
And you have echinacea. And there's the evening primrose.
Is this chrysanthemum or is this white?
Is this the yellow or the white?
That's the pink, the chrysanthemum.
Oh, that's the light pink. Yeah.
Listeners, you can't see the view, but we're looking at so many colors.
Colors, reds, and
forms, shapes.
Yes.
We're walking right past the rhubarb.
Yeah, we're getting some food for a moment.
Oh,
a very old lilac.
Oscar,
it was on the ground, and it was just sort of very old. And we had these lilies. They were in over there. So we put the gazebo there and cleaned all that out, but I brought the lilies over here and then made it across here so it closed this feeling of the garden. And look at them, they're going crazy.
And they're almost red, this one, and then the other ones are the...
I think the people who lived here, there was this, as you know, from if you read Ron's book, there were these, in the turn of the century, I'm talking about 1900, the top of the hill sort of when the town just vacated, railroad didn't come, everybody left. These families from New York State, I think, but they bought these houses, they were summer properties. This, I think up here, they had some sort of a tennis court here. It was completely flat and then it dropped down. It's very strange. And then we know certain things about the house over there and the people who lived here. And we actually met the owners who'd had it for a couple of generations when we bought it, but it had no central heating. I'd never been there in the winter.
The summer?
Obviously, the original people were.
The summer cottage.
Yeah.
The levels.
Yeah. We're very proud of our garden, aren't we?
The different levels, yeah.
I love that it's gentle levels,
mm-hmm.
and it's just wonderful. And it invites you to sit and meditate. It says, look at me.
Yep.
Look at me. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, you guys are a wonderful audience. I must say this is fun for us.
Well, I'm very appreciative because you know what I have, the exact opposite in some ways. It's kind of like the wild. The wild.
That's right.
We walk into the wild.
That's pretty nice, too.
It's a nice, I'm very appreciative of it. I get to eat lots of good food out of the wild.
No, I quite like the cultivated food, I like my beetroot.
We have both. When we first moved up here, we noticed that little monument up there to the old church, there was thyme everywhere, and it said, this is going to be a good place.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
And this actually, one viburnum
on this kind of
is so scented, but it only lasts about 4 or 5 days when it flowers. But the scent is tremendous.
The way the light is here, it would be right now or coming, because the sun sets there. So the light hits the flower garden. Behind it, it's dark. It's in shadow. Mm. And then it's light in the meadow. So it looks like stage lighting.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm. Wow. Well, we should probably let you have some peace.
This is fun. This is a lot of fun. You're great.
It was. So thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Once again, we had a conversation with Ben Luxon and Susie Crowfoot in their extensive Sandusfield garden.
This is WBCR LP Great Barrington, Berkshire Community Radio, broadcasting at 97.7 FM and streaming at berkshireradio.org, where you can find recent episodes of our show and make a donation to support locally produced programming. We also archive them for a longer time at touchtheearthmusic.com. Thanks for listening.